Another commitment, another recruiting win, and another reminder that there may be more talent, more momentum, and more reason for optimism around Wisconsin football than we've seen in a long time. I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective. Woohoo! Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome into the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers on today's show. Well, I have the hiccups. We'll start with recruiting, where Luke Fickell and his staff picked up another commitment in Brody Fannin-Steele. We'll break down what Wisconsin is getting, where the 2027 class stands, and maybe the biggest recruiting question facing the program right now. How confident should Badger fans be that Wisconsin can actually keep some of the top talent, already committed in this class? Then we'll get into our main event, five reasons to believe. Justin and I have each put together our biggest reasons for optimism heading into the 2026 season. Some are about recruiting, some are about the roster, some are about the coaching staff, but all of them help explain why 2026 feels different around Wisconsin football. So if you've been looking for reasons to be excited about where this program is headed, you're in the right place. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. So you know when we make new content. I apologize, I have the hiccups now. I'll try to get rid of that. First time Justin starts talking. happy Father's Day to you, Justin.
Happy Father's Day to you, man.
Nice. And to all the fathers out there. Yeah, yeah, times two. This is my first Father's Day with two. But to all the fathers who are listening out there, we know there are several of you out there that do. So thank you so much for your support of the show. And happy Father's Day to you. Hope you had a great day with your family, your children, whatever the case is, whoever you are, wherever you are, fathers out there. Thank you for all you do. We have got a good show today, really good show, talking about some reason, main big time, very specific reasons for optimism. Excuse me again, my hiccups. We're going to talk about Brody Fannin-Steele. Justin got his guy. So we're going to talk about that, of course. But I wanted to give you guys a quick preview of upcoming content because, of course, the summer's here. Kind of the Bucky Report's countdown to kickoff, if you will. We've got a lot going on. Sunday shows that are going to be including hot takes, defensive previews, offensive preview. Obviously, we're going to get into fall camp insiders, which we did last season with certainly with Nick Osen, maybe Jake Kokorowski. We're going to talk about camp stock up, stock down, of course, and then we'll have our official preview show the week before the season starts. Special show, Big Ten Media Days coverage. I'm going to be at Big Ten Media Days, so I'll be doing some live stuff from there. And of course, our Know Your Foe series. We can never get through all 12 teams, so we're going to do eight. I'm already starting to work up, lining up some guests for that. So that's going to start July 1st. It's going to be every Wednesday through August 19th. And of course, season opener live from Notre Dame. Justin and I are both going to be in Notre Dame for that game. So if there are other things that are not on this list, if you're watching on YouTube, that's one of the things that are up there. But you can also let us know. Put stuff in the comments, things you want us to cover kind of heading into football season. If there's things that you're like, boy, I want to look at the football season from this angle, maybe it's something schedule related or whatever the case is, let us know. And we'll get that going. Justin, how are you, man? How was your Father's Day?
I'm doing good. I got to spend some time with my dad. Went over there for breakfast this morning. Got some hiking in this afternoon. Other than that, just kind of being able to take it easy today. So that was nice to be able to get out of the way. Just enjoy my weekend. I'm trying to get my butt back in shape. But yeah, it was a good day. How about you?
It was good, man. Went to brunch this morning and both of my kids were in Badger gear. I sent Justin and Ryan a photo of that. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my baby and of course my 3.5-year-old daughter were in Badger stuff. So perfect way to spend Father's Day. Watch World Cup, which of course I will continue to do. The U.S. is absolutely on fire. Absolutely. It's great. We're going to be really good. The knockout stage, we're not going to win it. We are going to be really good.
It'll be interesting based off of what the early projections of what their future potential opponents are. Cause I don't see anybody that looks like they are like incredibly difficult. Like they can play with the teams that are quasi being projected towards them right now. So they have opportunity, I guess is what I'm trying to say. They could easily have been put into groups where it's like, yeah, you're not making it through this. They have an outside shot at making it to like the quarters.
They will run into Spain, which, you know, if you looked at projections before today, it looked like the bracket was pretty easy because Uruguay was in there, but Spain will win that group. Spain just drew their first game. They are now going to win that group, which means we will play them to get to the quarters.
I thought Cape Verde was supposed to potentially win that one.
Spain's winning that group. Guaranteed. Okay. Spain's one of the best teams in the world. They did win today, like 5-1 or something like that. They will win the group. Okay. For sure. Because Cape Verde.
Yeah, Spain would be a problem.
The brackets right now, if you're looking at that, it's a little bit difficult to look at because their groups are very muddled. Once the best teams start winning their groups, right? Like once England wins their group, once France wins their group, that everything will change and it will shift a little bit.
We've already won ours, right?
Mexico's won there, so we're in good shape. But you know, yeah, lots to go on there, which is good. All right, so we're going to talk about reasons to believe. So we're going to talk about specific kind of reasons for optimism. But first, it's going to be all about recruiting. Brody Fannin-Steele, Justin's guy, Justin's number one guy in this class, has committed. I know you did a show with Ryan on it when it hit. How excited are you about this? How important do you feel like this really is for us?
I think that when I look at it, anytime you can get a guy who is a super high motor guy, try hard type, but also has a ton of athleticism and has some plays with a really violent streak, you're in a good place because those are guys that kind of get other guys, they up other people's intensity. I thought last year that was Mason Reiger. I thought that it did show, and especially like having Reiger out there, but then also adding in Posa, who is another similar in that regard, like they're both super intense players, was a huge deal for the defense. And getting more guys like that, those tend to be your leadership guys on the field because they're the guys that are playing with their hair on fire the whole time and just showing everybody that you need to play this hard. And I think that that's really important. Sky's the limit for him in terms of ability. What I will say is this, he's not playing the highest level of talent right now in high school. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to playing college guys. It might be a little bit of a shock to him, to the system initially. The reality is I think he just plays too hard to not be successful eventually. Like he will figure out a way to be productive. It just might take a little bit. He's got weight to put on anyway. So he's probably going to be a guy who's going to play at 240 or 250.
Yeah, he is listed as a three-star, 6'4", 255 pound edge out of Hoisington, Kansas. There's no way he's staying a three-star. There's just no
chance. The film is ridiculous.
Yeah, man, listen, this guy, we've talked about him a lot. If you listen, watch our last few shows, we've talked a lot about Brody Fannin-Steele and how great, great, great of a defensive line edge rusher guy he really is and how much he can add to the upside of this class. And, man, I just feel like one every week that goes by, there's just another big recruit that Luke Fickell is able to land. I mean, I feel like this is really starting to speak wonders about the prowess of this recruiting staff. We talk about them a lot, but man, like I wanted Zion, we got him. We're going to talk about holding on to him soon. You wanted Fannin-Steele, we got him. Like there's so many good guys in this class. There's already 8 4 stars, and there could very well be more. Like man, it's really quite a class, Justin. And I feel like the recruiting staff has done an incredible job.
Yeah, I think that there's no other way to put it. I think what I will say about the recruiting and holding on to these guys is unlike different years, I think that you look at it and Wisconsin has more resources to actively retain, which in other years you would have said if one of the big sharks came, you know, circling, they had the resources to just be like, we're just going to outbid you. And I don't know that necessarily that's the case right now. I think that Wisconsin does they need to be selective with who they do it. They absolutely could not do it across the board for everybody. But I think if they have certain guys that they feel really strongly about, they absolutely have the money to say, all right, we can match that. You know, we're good. We want to keep you a part of the group. And I think that that's a big deal. Cause if you ultimately have the relationship side already locked down, and you can't be necessarily outbid or at least can make it close, that's a big deal. Because more times than not, I feel like a lot of these kids that end up jumping ship, it's not choosing the place that they necessarily want to go. It's this place that makes the most financial sense. And if you take that out of the equation, you're going to retain a lot more guys at any school in that regard. Like if you've done a really good job of building that relationship, it still does ultimately fall back to it at some point.
It always will. It always will. Let's talk about that now. Yeah. Listen, I do think I'm confident that we're going to hold on to some of these guys. I know that, listen, Yazin Zion, certainly my top guy in the class. He's doing a visit to LSU. I understand that there's a lot of talk about that. Obviously we've got a lot of big name guys. Mekhi Williams already decommitted from Florida State before he committed to us. Brett Fannin decommitted from Texas Tech before he committed to us. So there's still going to be movement here. We're probably going to lose a guy. We're probably going to get a guy that someone else loses. So like there will be flips that happen in this class. And I agree with you on the investment. I think that's part of the reason. But ultimately, I've said it before, I think Luke Fickell's selling a vision here. And that's the number one thing that matters. Like ultimately, they've got to want to come to you and play there and feel like they can get on the field, which a lot of these guys can probably see a path earlier onto the field at Wisconsin than some of these other schools they're talking to. But I think the money is part of it. I also want to just say, and I want your take on this. I know you and I disagree on this a little bit. I have zero issue with guys taking the visits. And however they want to do it. Hold on. Let me say, I'm going to say, I know your point on this, but like, I'm fine with them taking visits. I'm also fine with them not telling anybody about it. They're not owed anything to anybody. If Zion wants to go to LSU and go check that school out, it's fine. Like he's going into his senior year of high school. He is a young kid who's being courted with money and opportunity and promises of the NFL. Like you're going to go through that process. You're going to do it. And at the end, I think it's incumbent on the school to be the people that say, yeah, we'll close you. Like where you want to come here. Like we'll make sure you stay here, but enjoy your time and see what your options are. I've got no issue with that. I also feel like once a kid, they don't owe you anything. They don't owe you anything until signing day. That's when it's officially done. And I think that too often we get a little wrapped up, and I'm not saying you do, cause I know you're going to have your say your piece on this. I just feel like, it's like people get mad when a guy goes to look at another school, but I'm like, we flipped two guys already, two huge guys in Williams and Fannin Steele, and we needed them to flip. So it's going to happen. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some in this. Can they hold on to them discussion? I have no issue with the kids and what they do. It's incumbent on the staff to keep them.
Yeah. There's a variety of things that I've heard back from people on this. What my perspective is on this is, if you want to take visits, fine, take your visits. I don't care. Just don't commit. Just don't. Like, because at that point, when you do that, a staff is starting to look at what they have for their options and numbers and say, all right, moving forward, we're predicting this person's with us. We're going to stop putting resources into something else that is a potential backup option. And I think in this case, the staff, it sounds like, was caught off guard by the fact that this visit was taking place. I don't like when you have a relationship to the point where you've committed to a staff that you've decided within a number of weeks to just be like, I'm already kind of breaking trust and I'm not just going to be upfront with this. I'm going to hide it. And that's fine. Like, I guess if he goes to the other school, that's fine. But I look at that from that perspective. And now if I'm on that staff, I have to look at it and be like, I can't trust anything you're telling me going forward, because you could tell me straight to my face, yeah, I'm all locked in. And next week you could be on a visit. And I've had people equate this to like management and like jobs that you're on. And I'm like, it's not the same. Like these kids have more pull in this than any of us have ever had as an employee. If I go out there and say, tell my boss that I'm looking at another company, he can fire me and he can fill that position within a number of weeks. Like, it's just a matter of getting somebody into that. These kids, that's not how it works. Like, yes, some of them, they can find somebody to replace, but ultimately, more times than not, if you say you want to take a visit, they're going to say, take the visit. That's fine. Just be upfront with us on it. They're not going to cut you loose unless you're a fringe guy that they're not super, like they don't view you as somebody they have to have. So I think when it comes to it, I just don't view it in the same light as employment. Like, it's just not the same to me, because these kids have so much power in terms of what's happening in this at this point with everything. Honestly, I don't care. Like, they deserve the right to go and see their opportunities. And it sounds like like my perspective on this is if Zion comes out of that visit without having committed to them, then I think we're in pretty good shape.
Yep.
Because if he leaves and doesn't flip at that point, they're going to lose a lot of that. Like that visit will fade a little bit. And it means that they probably didn't do enough while he was there for him to kind of jump. I'm big on communication. I don't like it when people play games with that. To me, that's where issues start to happen. And if I'm Wisconsin, I'm probably a little uneasy with it now. And I maybe don't cut loose some people that I was potentially keeping warm before. Or maybe they view him as he was a guy that was a, like, if you can get him, you take him no matter what. But if we don't get him, then we're fine with the numbers that we have there, which could very well be their perspective on that too. He's kind of a tweener, I think, believe in a good way with how the staff views him, is that he has positional versatility. They can put him at an edge. They can put him at, you know, a down lineman. And he can probably do either of those at a high level, which I would agree with. So it's a little bit of different ball game than some of the other guys.
Yeah. Will Hannah says, see who you want to see, but if you verbally committed, I think the proper thing to do is tell the staff you committed to that you're taking further visits. I totally hear this point. And I think it is fair. By the way, I do think it's fair that, you know, like if you committed, then you're owed that school something and a discussion. Surely, I think it is absolutely reasonable to say, if you want to take that visit to LSU, pick up the phone, let us know you're going to LSU. Mm-hmm. I get that. Gives our school a chance to engage and try to convince you otherwise or whatever the case is. I just think there's no perfect science to this. And like these guys are entering into a phase that is totally unknown with how much money's being floated around. They're literally, they just finished their junior year in high school. And they're talking to these guys, or these grown men who are like begging them to come play for them and offering them money to do it. Like it's a really crazy situation. So I think there has to be grace on all sides, especially with the kids. That's my
thing. I think to a degree, like I'm out of grace with this. Like when we start getting to the dollar figures that are being thrown around for this, you don't get to play the, but I'm just a kid card anymore. When you got potentially seven figures,
but they are still though. But they are though.
Then if you want to play that card, then don't play a sport where you're getting paid $1 million potentially to sign. Like you are getting opportunity that nobody else gets at your age. The least you can do is be as adult about it as possible. And that's why things like the Xavier Lucas thing piss me off so much, because it's like, just don't screw around with this. Just be a decent human being with this. And like, and I realize these kids have people that are buzzing in their ear that shouldn't be there. But I will also say on that, if it's anybody but a parent, and I can understand, I can fully appreciate how difficult it is to step away from a parent that's trying to push you in a direction. But if you have other people that are in your life, there's going to come times, no matter what age you are, where you have to look at somebody and say, are you good for me? And is having you in my life beneficial, or are you problematic to what my dreams and aspirations are? Are you swaying me to something that's not healthy? Because we've all been through that in our lives. We've all had that friend that's kind of the one that's like, let's go do this. And you're like, I don't think that's a good idea. And these kids have way more at stake than we ever did with the stupid stuff that we were doing. So you really have to be careful with the people that you trust to be in your life, because they are going to be people that pull you in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, listen, I don't want people to commit and then go elsewhere either. I just feel like at some point, what can you really blame the kid? Like I hear all sides of the argument. I just think that sometimes I see people online gonna be like, oh, super pissed off that Zion's going to LSU. I'm like, guys, like, come on, it's LSU. Like, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have committed if he was gonna go that visit. But maybe after he left, they called him and said, hey, we really want you to come here. We're convincing you to, like, they're salesmen too. They're doing the same thing. Oh, yeah. We need to focus on winning in the end, right? That's where it matters the most. And that's what you got to do.
Well, my perspective on this, and there's very few times where I would pull this card, and I've kind of brought it up on Ryan's Discord, was, you know, Wisconsin has the right to play hardball back on it. You have to be very careful with that card, and you have to be willing to lose the kid. But in my opinion, and it may not play out this way, but if you have a kid that's committed and he decides he's going to take a visit, I would say more times than not, that kid is assuming that he's probably going to go to the other school. And that's the reason he's taking the visit, because he's willing to lose what it is. And my perspective on that is, if you're Wisconsin, you then have the right to come back and say, that's fine, you want to take that trip, our offer's off the table if you go. But that's, as I said, that's something I would only do if it feels like the kid's not being above board with me and he's kind of doing sketchy stuff. At that point, I think, yeah, you need to kind of play hardball back and be like, all right, if you're going to start screwing around, then so are we. Because we're not going to just sit here and let you play games with us. It happened with Latimer. I said it last year when it started happening. Get this kid out of here. Just don't waste your time on somebody who's wishy-washy like this, because you don't have any business dealing with somebody who's going to kind of string you along. Like, either you're in or you're out. And that we waited 6 months where Wisconsin was in the lead the whole time. And it's like,
yeah,
get out of here if this is how you're going to play it.
I mean, the Latimer thing sucked. And the last thing I'll say on this is just that, like, we always talk about official visit weekends. Justin, we always do a show like first weekend. You got to give them the first weekend. Why do we want them in the first weekend? So we can sell them on the program in the first weekend, right? We don't want them to go to their other visits. We want them to commit and then stay and then not go to the visits. But we don't want them to do their visits. We want them to just commit. But like, not doing their visits to me isn't reasonable. So people say, well, then just don't go to your visits and don't commit. I hear that too, but yet our coaches are begging them to commit now before you leave campus. Like, it's just a balancing act. I think everyone's just got to understand the balance.
Well, what I'll say to that is most of these kids have taken 20 or 30 visits already.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the difference is like you're not getting your ass kissed quite as much when you're taking an unofficial as you are when you're taking an official. And it's like, that should not be the differentiating feature of whether or not you decide on a school, because we all know how this goes. They get their butt kissed when they show up. And then the first day they show up, when it's time to start breaking down and doing and playing, that goes out the window. Now you're here, you're enrolled, get your butt out on the field and get your act together. Like, they stop coddling them, so to speak, or trying to win them over. Now it's the same thing with, you know, that's been that way since the beginning of time. Like, every coach does it. Yeah, I'm your best friend until it's time to go up there. And they're still friendly with them. I don't mean to make it sound like they're not, but what they're doing is they want to win you over and then they want to get you out there. And Saban was one of those guys. Like,
right.
He would kind of do the I'm bigger than larger than life thing. And then once you get out there, like, he would just tear you apart.
Yeah. Last bit on recruiting. So right now, again, we're ranked 19th in the nation right now. The class will adjust because obviously numbers and other schools, and the Ohio State and Michigan were below us at one point. That obviously is not going to happen. We've got 8 4 stars in the class: Makai Williams, Kingston Allen, Cole Reeder, David Hill, Jai Jones, Kors Loken, Hunter Mellinger, and Jack Sorgi. Right now there's only 8.
I know, but it should be 10. Because right, so that's Zion and Fannin Steele should be.
So my question is that. So my question is, how many, if we keep everyone in the class right now, how many 4 stars do we end up with? In your prediction of who's going to be bumped up?
There are 3 people, 2 of which I would not be shocked if for some reason they don't. And I think it's going to be from where they're playing football. I think Steele Harris has the tools to be a 4-star. He probably will not because of where he's playing football. But I think that everything is there for him to be that guy. I think Fannin Steele shows everything you want to see on film for him to be a 4-star. He may get discounted because somebody's just going to look at where he's playing football. And then Zion, I think, will get it. But the guy who rated him initially is drunk. Like, I don't know what he was looking at with Zion's film and didn't think that he was a 4-star. We've had guys that we've gotten that were 4-stars in previous years that film isn't as good as what his is. And I look at, it's the same thing with Fannin Steele. We've had guys that we've got, edges that we've gotten, that are 4-stars that are not as good as Fannin Steele. And I'm like, I don't know what we're doing here. Like, what are you looking at when you're watching this?
Yeah. I agree. Steele Harris should, but he probably won't because he's Montana. My predictions are going to be Fannin Steele, Zion, Nathan Jones. I think those guys might take the 4-star.
I could see getting like an 89. I think he should be. Like, if Jake Wallace is a 4-star, then Jones deserves to be a 4-star.
He could be close. But yeah, Darren Graham is another one who I feel like could potentially slide up into the 4-star.
I'm not as bent on that one because I think that he's a kid that is a ball of clay a little bit more. Like, he's got, like, I think he's going to be really good, but I think he needs to add a lot of strength. Like, that's one of the biggest thing that I think stands out when I watch his film is, like, he's just not capable of just, like, physically overpowering people quite yet. And that will change. And when he has the combination of speed and power, he's going to be really hard to deal with.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into our main discussion tonight, which is going to be reasons to believe. There's a lot of, look, we have talked a lot on the show about excitement, optimism going into the season, but as part of our sort of countdown to kickoff, we're going to talk about reasons to believe. If you missed the top of the show, just a quick point out, we've got a lot of stuff coming up content-wise on the Bucky Report. A lot of Sunday shows coming up, of course. If you have an idea for a Sunday show, if there's something that you feel like you want us to cover on one of these Sunday shows, our big shows, kind of big topics, countdown to kickoff style, send us a message on Twitter, at Rajiv Badgers, at Bucky Report JJ. Let us know. DMs are open. Love to hear from anyone. Put a comment on the show, anything. Let us know. Know Your Foe series is going to start soon. Big Ten Media Days coverage is coming. So lots of stuff coming up this summer. All right, Justin. Reasons for optimism. We're each going to give you five reasons for optimism. I'm going to go first on this one, and we'll kind of talk through each one and let me know what you think about it, and then you can go next, Justin. Okay, so number one for me, Chris McIntosh announcing that he was keeping Luke Fickell has totally galvanized this program. And honestly, it shocks me. Like, in that moment, when we were hearing fire Fickell, were we yelling? I don't know. I wasn't yelling it, but we were certainly on the show talking about it.
I was.
when Chris McIntosh came out and said, you know what? We're reinvesting in the program. We are not getting rid of Luke Fickell. We're all like, what the? And you know what? So far, it's worked. It's galvanized the program. Literally from that moment forward, we looked good last season. We looked much, much better, bar the Minnesota game, which was a bit of a disaster.
I mean,
but like,
there's some correlation there with certain players getting out on the field.
Fair. We looked better, and you immediately saw things change because the program got a little more galvanized. Then you got guys like Colton Joseph and the transfer portal hall that we've covered before. Now you're continuing to look at recruiting classes. Like, I said that the program has hit rock bottom already, but I really feel like that particular announcement, I think we'll be able to look back, Justin, several years from now and say that was the moment that things really turned for us. But yeah, man, like, I really feel like this galvanized the program. And that, to me, that's a big reason to have optimism right now, because that McIntosh announcement worked.
Yeah. I mean, I went a little bit different role with this than you.
Yep. All good. I mean, I've got them all over the map, but yeah.
My first one was Colton Joseph. People can argue whatever they want to say about his completion percentage or throwing or whatever. He is the most dynamic athlete we've had at quarterback since Russell Wilson.
Okay.
That's a good and one. Regardless of what you want to say about the passing, he's not going to be Russell Wilson as a thrower. But athletically speaking, he is going to be a handful. He is going to be a guy that if you get too aggressive and over pursue and you leave a gash, you do the who is the Packer? Clay Matthews. You do the Clay Matthews where you completely give up contain and leave a giant gaping hole for him to run through. He's going to run for 200 yards in a game because you just can't leave contain with him. He is a quarterback that is capable of absolutely killing you with his legs. And that's something that is a huge, huge deal that Wisconsin, we've been begging for it forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think he probably is the most. I'm trying to think. Is there anyone else that's been more athletic that we've brought in?
Mordecai is the closest, right, probably, in terms of the Fickell guy.
I was going to say, Mordecai.
But yeah. I don't think as a runner that he's on the same tier as what Joseph is. Like, Joseph is just more physical.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Mordecai, in my mind, and this could be in my mind, Mordecai was like, he ran with a little more purpose and he was stronger. I feel like Colton Joseph still, like, he's a good size, but can Colton Joseph really stand up to the physicality of the conference when he's running? I don't know.
I think he's bigger than Mordecai.
Okay, he might be. I'm not saying
he's not faster. Bigger than
Mordecai. I just feel like he, I don't know. Mordecai seemed like a really strong runner, but you're right. Like, I think you're right about this for sure. And I've actually got one of mine as well that go along with that. Mine says there's absolutely no reason CJ cannot just go off this season and have like an absolute shocker of a season. That's absolutely a reason to be optimistic, because you can look at his career at Old Dominion. You can look at what he did against Indiana. You can look at all the things. What you just talked about with athleticism. You always see a group of five quarterback come out of nowhere and actually just dominate, like dominate when they transfer. And I think there's a real possibility that CJ could be that guy, that we could, Colton Joseph could be the guy that, you know, in the middle of December, where we're talking not Heisman stuff, but like in middle of November, people are talking about, oh man, is this the best transfer guy that anyone's ever got? Is Colton Joseph the guy that came out of the group of five and became the best quarterback and one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten? There is no chance. There's no reason he cannot absolutely go off.
I agree with that. We've seen over the last several years since the transfer portal stuff started happening, like people want to say that he has to go down. Like his numbers are going to get watered down because he's coming up. He's taking a step up. We've seen numerous guys that have come up from the group of five schools and been very productive at the power four level. I'm not going to say that it's going to happen. I'm just saying that that is one of the outcomes that is on the table with Colton Joseph. There's a very real chance that he comes up here and he excels. Like he's capable. Like he has that type of athletic ability. Some things are going to need to click with this team, and it's not all within his hands. Like there's going to be, the receivers are going to have to step up and really do some things. You're going to have the offensive line be excellent. Like, but there is a lot there to work with. I mean, if you watched last year when he was playing at Old Dominion, their offensive line low key kind of sucked. Like he bailed them out a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of times when he kind of was moving around in the pocket and avoiding stuff. They weren't like a total sieve, but they definitely let guys get in his face.
All right, Justin, what's your next reason for optimism?
Yeah, my second one was Eric Mateos. Mm. And I figured this is another way of saying I think the offensive line is going to be better this year. But I feel very strongly that he is a very, very good offensive line coach. It feels like he just has a knack for this. I love the energy that he brings. Like he's a guy that's very, and it's not to say that Blazek wasn't a guy that was very well liked, because all accounts are, everything that I've heard is he's a very well liked coach. But Mateos, the track record is a little bit higher. Like some of the stuff that he's done, he's been very high level. What he did last year at Arkansas on a team that was pretty meh talent level was borderline incredible, especially given that he brought in some guys through the portal to fill some spots with that team.
Can I just be the contrarian just for the sake of discussion and say that if I were to go back and watch our show when Blazek got hired, I'm guessing
he was a step up from Bicknell.
But I'm saying like, and that didn't work out. Like he,
okay, but
we were saying the same things about
Mateus. There is a difference in track record though, between what Blazek had done and what we've seen. Number one, one of the big things with Mateos is he's already worked with their offensive coordinator. Like they understand each other and what each other's looking for in terms of how the offense is supposed to be run correctly. There's no things that are lost in, you know, translation between the two of them trying to figure out what's going on. I think that they are going to do a very good job of being locked in with each other and understanding how to get this to function at a high level. And obviously he was the guy during, you know, Grimes's most productive years.
Yeah. So for the record, I agree with you. And I just wanted to just, you know, play the,
I think it's totally fair.
Devil's
advocate. There's going to be people that are going to argue it.
I think at the end of the day, like we haven't actually seen him coach this line yet. And we don't actually know what we're going to get from him. So we don't know what we're getting from RE Confessor either, but we're excited about it. And I think there is reason to be excited about Eric Mateos, and I am as well. And I think the O-line is going to be better. My next one is with the talent, albeit just projected talent, same kind of thing as we talked about Mateos. In the secondary, with the projected talent in the secondary, there's a chance this defense isn't just good. It's actually elite. There is a chance, Justin. And this to me is a big reason for optimism.
The secondary is one of the ones that is one of mine too. And it was, my exact phrasing was, this is the most athletic secondary that Wisconsin has had that I can remember in quite some time. The corner room is just more athletic. It just is. I think it's very telling. Like people will think it's just all portal guys. And I'm like, no, the fact that Jameer Scott was one of our in-house guys, you know, homegrown here, and he's jumping over Kai Bates right now and that could change. The fall camp could change with that. But in spring ball, Jahmyr Scott was the guy that took that role. Tells you all you need to know about his ability level and the type of athlete that he was coming in. Because Kai Bates, he was a premium athlete. That was a guy that was a high, a comfortable four-star that went to Florida State. Like, he was a really well-thought-of athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, man, like, it's kind of scary to think about how good the defense could be. And I, again, this is all just a guessing game right now. We don't know anything about what they're actually going to be, but we talk a lot about, you know, like projecting this team and what it's going to look like. And we talk a lot about offense, obviously, for obvious reasons, and Colton Joseph, but this defense, if the defensive line is going to be what it's expected to be now, and things we've heard coming out of the spring, obviously we'll see with fall camp, but there looks to be enough guys in the middle there. We obviously have arguably the two best linebackers in the Big Ten, and we've got some good edge rushers. And then if you couple that with the secondary, with the safety that we brought in, again, unproven at our school, though, because it's all new, we could be elite. And I think there's a huge reason to be optimistic right now, is that I look at the schedule and I think, and I have a schedule one coming up soon, too. You can really begin to see those 50-50 games with a good elite Badger defense. There isn't a game we can't win. There isn't a game we can't win. I mean, that's the truth. When you look at the schedule, the offense has to be better, but you can look at the schedule and say there's no chance for winning that game, because when your defense can keep you in it, you're really in everything, man. You really are. It's I'm actually beginning to get really optimistic about the secondary and the defense in a whole.
Yeah. My next one is Wisconsin has two of the probably top 20 inside linebackers in the country. And I would say one of those guys is probably top three in POSA.
In the country. Woo-hoo. Yeah.
Yes. Love it. I think that legitimately, as a pair, they are two of the best guys. And I think when you look at the productivity that the two of them are going to have by the end of the season, you're going to look at it and be like, okay. Because it would not shock me to see Coop have like 130 or 140 tackles. Because he's just amazing at cleaning everything up. And POSA, like, I was going to put out here what, you know, I was going to ask you over under, does anybody on the defense get 7.5 sacks or more?
I think it's going to be over.
I do too. And I think it's going to be POSA, because I think they're going to let him range. And I think he's going to be cut loose to go and cause problems. And I think that kid is absolutely capable of just absolutely blowing up plays. And you're not out running him with a quarterback. Like, there's not a quarterback in our league that's going to be able to run away from him.
And because, you know, there's going to be a game where he just is owning the offensive line and he gets like four sacks. Yeah. Like, I could see that happening in a game.
I don't know if he'll get four, but I could absolutely see a three sack jack kind of game where
which helps.
He blows up a series where they're shooting gaps.
Like, I think you could argue that Cheeks could have a really good season and get those numbers up there.
I think,
but POSA, with how incredibly dynamic he is, man, like, he's amazing. Like, I mean, he's absolutely unbelievable. And from when I first watched his film and like till now, we've been so high on him and we've been totally right, as has many people. It's not just us, but like, he's
the funny thing is, coming into this season, people don't realize how good he was. He averaged a sack a game at the end of last season.
Yeah.
And he averaged what? Probably 8 or 9 tackles a game. I think he was like 2 or 3 tackles for loss too. Like, his numbers were pretty unbelievable for such a short period of time. The fact that he's not like a preseason, given the production that he had in those last 4 games, is kind of nuts. Because there's not another, in my opinion, another linebacker that was up the rate that he was. And two of those were ranked games. So it's not like he was playing schlubs, you know, where he was just cleaning stuff up. Like, this is a guy who legitimately could make a run at double-digit sacks.
Yeah, I mean, POSA and Catalano are difference makers. They're not, they are difference makers. And you saw that based on what happened when they came in last year. So, yeah. Totally agree with you. Massive reason for optimism there. My next one was actually the O-line, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I put that the O-line should never be as bad as it was last year, and I think major strides will be shown. I think that when you talk about optimism, you have to look back at the offense last year and realize that it sucked. And one of the reasons it sucked is because of the O-line and the Kevin Haywood injury and the Davis Hinden experiment and everything that happened with the line and all the shifting and everything. Like, there's just, there was so much going wrong. And I've had discussions with people close to the program that say it is absolutely in a far better position than it was in last year. Far better. Is it elite? No. Is it amazing? No. But it is better. And that's all we need when you couple that with a good, with a better quarterback, preferably a healthy quarterback, running backs that have a lot of different profiles back there, a lot of different sort of talent in the backfield as well. Receivers, deep room, still question marks on whether they're a lead or not. But I think the offense looks like it's in a much better position because you can't get any worse than last year's line. You just can't.
Yeah, I have a hard time not seeing them at least be average like this year. Like, even if you get back to 20 points a game or whatever we were at before, like, it's still such a considerable step up from last year. Like, that means you're putting together at least a couple of competent drives a game, even if the rest of the time you suck. Like, last year, we were not putting together competent drives. We would go entire games without it, and the explosive plays just didn't exist. Like, I think we will have more explosive plays this season. Number one, having a quarterback that's your starting quarterback makes a world of difference in that regard. Like, that was part of the problem. You're not going to have typically a ton of explosive plays when you have a quarterback that's inexperienced and isn't able to see the mistakes that a defense is making because they're kind of in tunnel vision mode.
Yeah, totally. Justin, do you have any more reasons to believe on your list?
My last one is the schedule. People could say what they want about this. They could say that the Big Ten is the Big Ten now. The reality is none of these teams, like some of these teams that people want to suddenly prop up and make them good, they haven't changed. Like, Minnesota is still Minnesota. We sucked. It had nothing to do with Minnesota being better than previous iterations. It had to do with Wisconsin not being good enough. And the same thing with Maryland. Like, that's a team that a good Wisconsin team blows off the field. Like, they just do. They were not anything special. We were not a, like, our defense had not been locked in yet. And we absolutely, the offense was atrocious. Well, you take care of those two things. I mean, Minnesota, the Minnesota game last year, like, I don't even know if that game plays out quite the same if the weather's normal. And you can just pin your ears back on defense like we had the three games prior. So there are things here where I look at it and I'm like, if this is a decent offense and the defense is what we think it's going to be, like, these are games that are very winnable. Iowa is still a game that I'm kind of – that one scares me because for whatever reason, we really struggle with their defense.
So my last one is related to the schedule as well. I just put up a schedule graphic if you're watching on YouTube. We have 9 Big Ten opponents this year, as we do every year, right? So Penn State, Michigan State, UCLA, USC, Iowa, Rutgers, Maryland, Purdue, and Minnesota. Justin – off the top of your head, just to guess, so 9 of those teams, right? They all played 9 games every year in the conference. So 81 Big Ten games were played by these 9 teams. How many wins do you think this group had last year out of 81? The group that we're playing this year. Take a guess.
81. I'm going to say 38.
Okay. So 38 is a good guess. The answer is 28. 28 wins.
And USC must have had most of those.
I want to stress this. If you look at every Big Ten team, this, you want a reason for optimism? The Big Ten teams that we are playing this year had a combined 28-53 record in conference last year. 28-53. Now, what I did not do is look at the record of the teams we played, which is far better, obviously, because you have Ohio State, you've got Oregon, you got Michigan, all that nonsense. But that is a pretty damning statistic, 28 wins. Because obviously you look at Purdue, you know, you look at Maryland, you look at UCLA, you look at Michigan State, remember Penn State was 3-6 last year. Don't forget that. Like, none of these teams were any good except USC and Iowa had decent records.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Who are the two teams that scare you the most on this schedule that are in our Big Ten slate?
So
it's very easy for me.
So Penn State scares me just because they're still Penn State. And I understand. And I think James, look, I think that at the end of the day, Their new coach came out of Iowa State. His name is escaping me right now after Franklin left. But that guy, what is his name? Someone in the chat will put it up. They're going to be good. They're going to be really good just because they are what they are. And then the other one, sadly, is just at Iowa because I feel like we can never freaking win there. And I don't care what Iowa team you put out there. That's never an easy game for us. USC normally what's going to be, but I think being at home, I feel better about it.
So here's what I'll say. To me, it's USC simply because from a talent perspective, they're the most talented team that we're playing in the Big Ten this year. And then it's Iowa because we struggle with Iowa. Penn State, I struggle to know what they're going to be this year because that team had a massive outflux of blue chip talent. And I would guess that it's the bulk of the guys who were their guys who were difference makers went with Franklin. They went from like a blue chip ratio of something like 47% down to like 27%. So they lost a considerable amount of top shelf talent. Now they have a really good quarterback, which I think helps them. And I think Campbell is a very competent coach, but I also don't think that I look at Campbell and say that this guy is like, he's not reinventing the wheel there. Like if you have a really good defense against him, I think that he's going to struggle to do some things. And I think that they lack the difference makers on defense that typically caused problems for us that they've had in prior years. That doesn't mean I think the defense is going to be bad. I don't think it's going to have like a, it's not going to be loaded with ultra talent again. Those first round draft pick defensive guys aren't going to be there.
Yeah. Penn State's still a tough place to play. It's still a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play.
It could be a whiteout game. Well, that probably won't be that early in the season.
If that game was at home, I'd feel much differently about it. Like that's just how it looks out. And I think ultimately with our Big Ten road games, Penn State, UCLA, Iowa, Maryland, Purdue. Look, Maryland beat us last year. So you never know that quarter. Like you never know what's going to happen with these guys. And you could look at this and say, boy, you could still see 5-7. You could look at it and see 8-4. You could look at it and see 9-3. You can look at it in a lot of different ways. Oh,
yeah. But if the offense think comes that, together, like, you could see 10-2. Like it's.
But I think at the end of the day, you
really have to squint for a lot of this stuff.
28-53 combined Big Ten record of these nine opponents that we're about to play. That is a shocking number, and it says that if the Badgers are going to use a year to, you know, to get back to normalcy and to get back to a bowl game and get the ship sort of on the right path, and this is the year to do it. And 27 is a similar year. Obviously, you know, starting off in Notre Dame is not going to be easy, but yeah, good comment. You put this up there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, wait, Marlon. I think people are discounting how much money Big Ten teams are spending these days. There are no cream puffs. I disagree with this, actually. There are teams on this that I do think are spending. I think Penn State's spending. I think UCLA is spending. And I think USC are spending. The other six teams that we're going to be playing this year, I have a very modest NIL. And we should be the – if we're looking at it purely from an NIL standpoint, I would guess that we have a fairly comfortable gap between what those teams have spent. And that's including Iowa, who I don't think has crazy money. I think they just do a really good job of developing and evaluating.
So I actually do agree with this statement from White Marlin. I do think that people are underestimating a lot of teams. And I think that because you're right, like people are spending but the thing is like, you never know when they spend what that team's going to look, how that team's going to really come together. And I will never believe that there are cream puffs anymore after what happened with Indiana. Because you just never know what a team can put together in a transfer portal era. Guys that we've never watched film for, all of a sudden Rutgers is loading up. And I'm not saying they're going to have a great season, but like I'm just saying like these teams can absolutely still beat us on any given day because we're not that great still. And teams can improve very, very quickly. Now, I realize this goes against my point earlier, the 28-53, and I still think we're in a good spot, and I'm optimistic about it. But I do think you have to always remember that all these teams can get better and all these teams are excited about this year too.
Where I will push back on that heavily is that's the best coach in college football coaching Indiana. So yes, they brought in some guys from the portal, but you also had an elite evaluator and an elite coach that brought those guys in. And I think there's a difference there between just about every other coach in college football and what he's capable of. And that's just fair. Because when he gets people in, they get better. Like, not every other team does that. And even Wisconsin can't play that game. Well, we'll see how much better we got this from this second year. But we didn't get substantially better simply by bringing guys in. And I realize the money has been a lot different coming into this season than it was. So we'll see. Because I think there's been a definitive influx in better talent than what we've did. This team needed to get some positions really it. So we'll see what ends up happening here. But this is the deepest team we've had since Fickell's been here. I feel really good about the fact that you have legitimately a lot of competition at most of these positions, which will only help this team get better.
Yeah, listen, I want to be clear. I'm not saying there's a cursing Nettie on our schedule. We're not facing a cursing Nettie. I just, my greater, broader point was that teams can surprise you. And there are teams that you might look at your schedule and think that's a cream puff. But listen, Western Illinois and Eastern Michigan probably are. But the rest of them are still in this conference, and they're still getting guys. And I don't think any of them are cream puffs, especially with the way we've been playing football.
Not even Purdue?
Purdue always is. Except, here's what I'll remind you about Purdue. Because, you know, I know Purdue very well. We've beaten that team 19 straight times in a row. They're due for a loss. And boy, oh boy, would that not be a way to get it. But they're still getting decent athletes. They're making coaching changes. They're going through flux. They're going through, like, any of these teams on our schedule can beat us. Any of them, except those two after Notre Dame. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just think that you have to look at it with a grain, like, you know, it's every team's talking the way we are about our team right now. That's my point.
I'm very curious with the new staff at UCLA. If they brought in enough top shelf talent, because I don't think that you can bring in the roster that you had at James Madison and expect that to play in the Big Ten. I think that there are guys that can definitely play in the Big Ten that they brought over, but I don't think you can rely on that to be a difference-making group. You have to have some guys. And the biggest thing that you saw with Indiana was they found a way to get good in the trenches. Like, year one, they were really good on the trenches under Cignetti. That I'm not necessarily sold that UCLA is going to be capable of doing that, and that's what they're going to have to do. Because there's a lot of people out there that are like, they're going to make the jump this year. And it's like, well, this is not the same type of situation. You saw what happened when they faced a real team in the playoff, and they got absolutely destroyed. And, I mean, Oregon could have put whatever they want on them in that game. It was Oregon, right, that they played? That put up like 40 points on them or whatever before they even scored?
Played who? Who are you talking about?
In the playoff, James Madison?
Who did James Madison.
Was that Oregon, right?
Yeah. Was it Oregon? I don't remember.
I think it was.
I don't remember. I can't think back at what I did yesterday.
Yeah, I know. There's too many teams now in the playoff. It's hard to remember who was all involved.
But yeah, no, I mean, look, the schedule's not going to be easy. There's going to be games that are going to hiccup. But I think ultimately, you got to feel really good about. Again, it's a reason for optimism. The schedule is a reason for optimism, and the fact that they're 28 and 53 is a big reason for optimism.
Oh, for sure.
You showed a comment earlier from Will Hanna. Joseph, completion percentage over under 62.5. So first of all, we are going to do an over under show. We'll answer this now. We are going to do an over under show coming up in our countdown to kickoff. But Justin, we've talked about this a little bit before. Where are you at with this one?
I think he's going to be around 64.
Yeah, I think it's under. I'm sorry. I think he's going to have a good season, but I think it's under.
That's fair. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that ends up being in this offense this year. Dump offs to the tight end and stuff like that, that were just throws that they didn't have when he was at Old Dominion. And I think that that's going to up his total considerably because it's just easier throws. There's so many throws. Like, if somebody wants to take a look at this and wonder where the percentage is going to jump, just watch some game footage of Old Dominion and you'll see that every pass is like 15 yards downfield. And you're like, okay, I can kind of understand why if we start throwing some 7-yard curls, how suddenly he gets, you know, a couple extra completions a game to get that number up. And it's like,
For sure.
if you're throwing swing passes or dump offs to the tight end, it gets up quite quick. Now, part of that is going to be, does he take the check down or is he going to start trying to throw rifle shots, you know, 15 yards downfield still? you have to coach some of that out of him a little bit. The aggressiveness, you always want it there, but you need to make sure that he understands, take the play that's there.
The good news is we are 77 short days away from football season, from Justin and I being, I know, but it's 11 weeks, being in Lambeau Field. Again, lots of content coming up. We're going to be doing over-under show. We're going to be doing a camp stock up, stock down show. We're going to be doing a hot take show. So much going on. Know Your Foe series is going to start July 1st. Try to kick that off with Notre Dame, but it might be one of the other opponents. We're not going to go in order. We're going to do eight. I've already identified those eight teams. Basically, the bigger games on our schedule. We're not going to do Eastern Michigan or Western Illinois. We're not going to do Purdue or you know, Rutgers. We're not going to do all that stuff. But we are going to do a lot of the big games and talk through. What we've done in the past. We'll bring on a podcaster from another school that kind of knows those things and is a fan, hopefully, and understands that, so they can kind of give us some insight as to what they're thinking. We talk a lot about what we're thinking, but what we don't talk about is what they're saying. So we're going to do that, kind of give you a sense of, you know, what's happening with other teams. How were they happy with their transfer portal haul? Are they happy with what they heard coming out of spring camps? So there's a lot of excitement there. You have a comment you put up.
Yeah, from Matt Van Grinsven. How much money did the long touchdown run against Indiana make, CJ? The answer to that is which one? He had 270-plus yard touchdown runs in that game. The reality is it wasn't just against Indiana that he did it, but it's impressive that he did it against Indiana. He was a handful on the ground no matter who they played. You take that game out of it, he still ran for 800-plus yards on the season.
Yeah.
So he absolutely is capable of just gutting anybody with his legs.
He is. He is indeed. We have a lot to look forward to, for sure, and hopefully that gives you some reasons for optimism. If you are still listening to this, hit that like button. Really, really helpful to the show. Thank you so much for being one of the 40% of you that stays all the way till the end of our show. So thank you for that. We appreciate that. Thank you for subscribing. We're trying to hit 3,000 subs before football season, so appreciate that, and thank you for that. And if you want to get all this cool content we've got coming up in the summer, make sure you hit that subscribe button if you're not already, so you can know when we make all this new, fresh content. That'll do it for this week. We'll be back again next week to talk more stuff about this football season, recruiting, everything like that. Final thoughts, Justin, before we close the show today?
Yeah, can we just fast forward? Like, I'm to the point now where I just want to be ready for the game. Like,
it's only 11 weeks. It's only 11 weeks.
Zach Bart's in the chat saying he's going to the Notre Dame game. So are Rajiv and I, and so is Ryan. So I'm ready to get there. And just number one, I want to enjoy the atmosphere, because Green Bay is a great town to be in for like a game day. And it's such a cool area around the stadium that it's just going to be a blast no matter what. But I'm really looking forward to that game.
I'm really hoping we don't get cooked. Because that, I don't think we are going to be good enough.
We don't get cooked.
I don't think
like, the offense still scares me.
They are really, really good. They are one of the best teams in the country. They are one of the favorites to win the national title, by the way. So I'm just putting it out there, but it's going to be difficult.
That's fair. Really, I don't see that for them, but that's because I think Notre Dame is, they're a little bit of front runners to a degree.
That's fine. Either way, though, like they are still Notre Dame. They still have a good roster.
They do. Absolutely. Like, they could kick our butts and still, I don't think they'll win the national title. Those two things are not mutually exclusive.
That's fine. Either way, I'm hoping that we can see a good game, because we are going to be up there. Hopefully we'll get another game in Madison as well. All right, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back again next week to talk about more Wisconsin Badger, all the different kinds of stuff. Again, if there's things you want us to cover in this summer, put that in the comments on the YouTube show, comments on our podcast. And of course, you can always send us a Twitter, send us a note on Twitter at our G Badgers at Bucky Report. JJ, thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.